Hello, and welcome to the Midwest Genealogy Center's Tell Me a Story program, an initiative to record America's family history in sound. Oral histories are one of the most personal and rewarding ways to preserve family stories. The Tell Me a Story sessions are 45-minute interviews between two people with the assistance of a trained facilitator. Participants will receive a compact disc with the full interview. A copy will be archived at the Midwest Genealogy Center and, with permission, later made available to the public. And now, another story.
We're going to try again. My name is David Bush. Today's date is July 12, 2016. We're at 6735 Sterling Avenue, Raytown, Missouri. Ken, could you state your name, your full name?
Kenneth F. Houston.
And today's date is?
July 12, 1916.
And we're at what location?
I was in 2016.
What location are we at?
6735 Sterling, Raytown, Missouri.
Okay. Where were you born?
Missouri City, 12/31/1919.
Okay, that was your birth date. Okay. And where did you grow up?
Missouri City.
Okay. And what stands out in your mind about growing up there?
Well, it was a great life. It was far different from what the kids have today. We entertained ourselves mostly. I had a younger brother, and we were very close, or we were always building something or doing something together.
Did you have a job in Missouri City, or?
Well, I guess some of my first jobs were picking potatoes, and when they harvest them, they paid 10 cents a 100 pound, and sometimes you could make maybe $2, $2.50 in a day if the potatoes were good, and then I shocked wheat and oats and hoed weeds out of corn for the farmers. That paid $1 a day and my lunch and transportation. And the first real job I had, I guess, was in the grocery, a general store, Simmons Brothers. The older brother wanted to go visit some of his family, and he asked me if he'd help his brother Will in the store, which I did. But he also had a 29 Whippet that he delivered groceries in, and so I got to drive the Whippet and deliver the groceries. Of course,
about what year would this be? 35 or so?
No, I'd probably been about
1932, okay.
Well, me and my brother, we learned to drive. My father and mother and my younger sister would go visit some of her family, and her sister would pick her up. And so Dad had bought this 28 baby Overland. And anyway, when they'd leave, why, we'd back it out of the drive and out of the garage and back it forth the drive. And then finally, we got brave enough to go out on the roads. And now the rest of the story on that was one day at dinner, Mom told Dad that she needed to go to Liberty. And he said, "Oh, hon, I can't take you. I got too much going." And I spoke up and said, "Well, we would take her." And she said, "Oh, you can't drive." And anyway, it was little arguments back and forth there. And after dinner, now this was dinner, this wasn't supper, this was dinner, and so we went for a ride, and when he came back, he said, "Hon, when you want to go someplace, you let the boys take you." So that was my driving. So I've been driving since I was about 12.
Okay.
So after this grocery store thing, the same summer, Gerald Levi opened a restaurant and a beer joint where the old theater was. Well, it's in the building. And he and his son Richard wanted to go on a fishing trip. And so he asked me if I would help his wife in the restaurant. And they were gone about a week. And of course, I was serving beer, and she was doing the cooking for that and everything. So I was, that was my second job. That was actually a job.
Okay.
And then a third job would, that had been about 33, I guess. I was shocking wheat. I was still that dollar a day job. And my older brother was working in Kansas City at a Donaldson radio and refrigeration. And he was a radio repairman. And he was coming home on the weekends. And he said, well, how would you like to have a $3 a day job? I said, well, it beats this $1. So anyway, I had that for, about maybe 7 weeks or so before school. And I was helping the refrigeration guy, and these units were on top of the cabinet, and they probably weighed, close to 100 pounds. And so they would repair them, and then they would exchange them and things. And so I would help him. Sometimes we'd carry him up narrow steps and everything, and there was a portable hoist that we used to set them in the cabinet and everything. And so that was, my chore was to help him and flunky around the shop. And at the time, they was also installing radios in cars, because, you know, this was before radios were an aftermarket. And they was also putting in police converters in some of the 33 V8s. And most of them were Italian, it seemed to me. I don't know. That was before all this other stuff. And then I know one time had a refrigeration, air conditioning call, and it was down on 18th Street. And it was below ground level. There was a few steps under it, kind of like a basement. And anyway, there was a big crap table there, and it was crowded, and I never seen so much money in my whole life. So after that job, it was school, and usually the jobs I had were usually with on the farms or something, you know, shocking wheat, because this was before I had combines. Mm-hmm. And so anyway, that was pretty much the same. And then, Hyder, Paul Hyder, bought where the Hyder Garage is now, but that was another building. Oh boy, I'm trying to think of the guy's name that had that. You're trying to crowd my brain.
That's okay.
But anyway, when I was going to high school, if we didn't have any chores, sometimes on the way home, I would stop there, and I was kind of curious about everything anyway, and so sometimes I'd pump gas or maybe even repair a tire or something. And then when I graduated from school, he put me to work.
Is this Alva Hyder?
Alva Hyder.
Oh, okay.
And I don't know, I was just flunky, and I learned a lot. And he started taking flying lessons. And sometimes he'd be gone for hours, and between his flying lessons and running for parts and everything, he left me in charge of the thing. I was the whole thing. And a lot of the, especially the gasoline, it was 7 gallons for a dollar. And a lot of the customers where I had accounts, in other words, so it was bookkeeping. It wasn't too often I really handled cash. But other than when they come in maybe to pay their bill, anyway, he trusted me with taking care of that. So Okay, that's along. That's 38 at the, about, what, 30, I guess about 39, I guess it was 40. Okay, I'm trying to remember when they had instituted the draft. All youths from 18 to 30 unmarried had to register. And they had started, well, they were doing a lot of construction on this, well, the war thing, because they were supplying a lot of materials to England and England principally, because the war had started there. And there was a lot of work going on in construction. And anyway, the guys with the 1A, why, they couldn't get in on it. But anyway, I was there until I went in service. And then I was in 43, and then I got out in, what, 46. And I stopped by to see Hyder, and he says, well, he says, you found a job yet? And I said, well, no, I just got home. And he said, well, Herb White wanted to see me. And him and his brother had an auto supply in Independence. And so anyway, I went to see him. And that was really my, well, that was the first job after I got out of service. And I was hired as a machinist. And at that time, why, there hadn't been any new cars for, well, I guess 40 was the last time there was any new cars. And so everybody was trying to keep what they had running. And, I did a lot of repair work on the engine, reboard them and put sleeves in them and grind crankshafts and repair generators and starters and valve jobs and repaired blocks that had been frozen so they could still use them. And well, I was there, I worked there until, oh boy, 40, 50, 51, I guess it was. And I guess 51. One of the guys in the machine shop there had been a foreman out at Lake City, and they had restarted it, and they'd called him back. And then he told me, he said, well, why don't you put up an application out here at Lake City? And he said, maybe they'll put you on. And I said, oh, well, I did, and I was hired. And anyway, at that time, they were putting all this machinery back in operation, and they had been in mothballs, Cosmoline. They had to be all disassembled and reassembled, and sometimes the parts got mixed up because it's all precision production machine, and parts wouldn't interchange because up to a point. They all look the same, but there may be a few thousands difference in there. That when you're producing these cartridges, why, there's no, you had very little variation. And it took probably about, I was in the bullet assembly where they made the bullets for the 30 caliber carbine. And it was probably, it was a good probably 8 months before there was three of us in the department before we had to, and this was, we was, go back a little bit, it was on three shifts, and they would change every 30 days from rotating shifts. So actually there was nine people in the department working around the clock, and it was, I guess, it's about 8 months before we had everything running again. They ended up leaving me in that department, and then one day the superintendent sent word out he wanted to see me, and I thought, well, gee, what have I done? So I asked him, I went in, I said, what have I done wrong? And he says, not what you've done wrong, it's what you're going to do. I want you to do. And he says, I want you to work in every department in this building. But first, I want you to go work for the engineers, because they were trying to create the casings out of steel instead of brass. So anyway, I worked for the engineering for, probably 6 weeks, and they finally gave up on that. And I was welding machine, and I had changed the die, all that whole thing. In other words, I was their maintenance and whatever it was going for. And after that, I ended up working in every department, and of course everything was running pretty good, and I had a lot of idle time usually in each department. And the operators, I could give them a break. I could do everything but the inspection. So my idle time, I was relieving the operators, not all the departments. Then I think it was, 55, I guess, I got laid off. They closed it down to one shift. And then I went to work for Havens. Well, the superintendent and I were fishing one morning, and he wanted to know if I'd got a job yet. And I said, well, I got two. I'm looking at it. I haven't made up my mind. He said, well, why don't you come down? And he said, you can go to work, and if you don't like it, we'll take one or the other. So anyway, I ended up spending 35 years there. Mm. And when I left, they made me supervisor. And the night, they had two shifts. And the night shift maintenance man got hurt. And the superintendent promised me that, I'll get a replacement for you and everything. And then he said, I want you to put your lead man on nights. Well, he was involved with the VFW over in Kansas City, Kansas. And, that shut him off of that thing. And that went along for, about almost 2 months, I guess it was, something like that. And I thought, this has been in 1990. And I thought, I'm getting where I can retire. But anyway, they told me, back when they made me superintendent, said, you got this job as long as you want it. And so I say, I thought, get him back. I'll just tell the superintendent that I'm going to quit. I gave him 30 days. Well, hell, in about 2 weeks, he had a replacement for the guy. He got to go back to his normal work. And then when I retired there, Fred Havens, president, he wanted to know, he says, what are you going to do? And I said, I'm going down and work on that Connie down at the airport. And he said, if we got anything you need, you come and get it. And that's, I did. I figured it. He ended up with use of his equipment and the boom trucks, they were, used them I don't know how many times, because all these damn, we had to change all the engines and pull the wings off us and everything, and it would take a boom truck to handle that, and sometimes they'd be there for 2 or 3 hours, I figured up roughly that with the boom trucks and the material that I'd got, he had something like maybe $15,000 in that airplane. Mm-hmm. The company did. So I ended up spending 18 years working on the Connie.
Wow. This is restoring the Connie then, down in North Kansas City?
Yeah.
Okay. What were your parents' names? Let's start with your father.
Robert Sinclair Houston. And my mother was Martha Clay Houston.
Okay. What's your strongest memories of your parents?
Well, Dad was Well, how do you explain it? He was the repairman, plumber, electrician, mason, and coal mine. That was, I think he started to work in the coal mine. He lost his father when I think he was, what, around 16? And so he was the support. He went to work in the coal mine, so we worked the coal mine from like September to maybe April, somewhere along like that. I don't know. Mm-hmm. And then he had bees, and that was his, home job, I guess. And honey was 10 cents a pound. You could buy a gallon of honey for a dollar. And it was traded to, for maybe a slab of bacon or a shoulder or something. So that was where, other than a chicken, that was or sausage or something like that. And that was traded for that produce from the farmers and stuff. But, of course, all of his tools was hand tools. He had built a table saw. And Dutch, my younger brother, we were always building something. He always had lumber or something around, and we was always doing something. And I know one time I can't remember now just what we was doing, but anyway, we never took his, put his tools back, and that kind of upset him. He said, "Boys," he says, "you can be the problem, you can be the solution." He says, "I don't want any more problems." And that was, anyway, we spent a lot of time, when we weren't doing our chores, all the river work was going on about that time, and we spent a lot of time sitting on the bluff watching that. So that was most of it. In other words, we entertained ourselves. We didn't, I don't think we had, I think we had a bat and a ball, and I think a glove, ball glove, and that was it. The rest of the stuff, we went to the community dump. We was always trying to salvage something, and I know one time we found two steel wheels, two rubber tire wheels. They were just probably 8-inch wheels and axles. And anyway, we built us a push car and had a wheel on a broomstick with ropes in it to steer the thing. And we had a one wheel brake and put a block on the back of it, and so we could push one another with a shovel handle. And when we wasn't coasting, we was pushing one another. And then one time we built us a front tricycle wheel and a smaller rubber tire. So we built us a coasting bike out of lumber twos. And we, of course, were riding on rough ground and everything. And usually every time we'd do a coasting job, we'd have to repair the darn fork on the thing. But anyway, we was always building something. And we built a tree house in a big maple tree in the chicken yard with salvage material, lumber and stuff. And we'd use, at that time, there's also mining rock off of the bluff and west of our property. And they were using dynamite and black powder to do the blasting. And they had powder cans. It was about maybe a 3-gallon size, And we used that for a stove in our treehouse. Well, we'd lined the thing with cardboard. And one time my cousin, Robert, came down, and we'd gotten some hot dogs, and we were going to cook some hot dogs. And And we usually burned corn cobs in the stove. We had, well, it was a gutter for the, a downspout for the flue and everything. But anyway, we dumped, dipped them in some kerosene, and it made it a little too hot, and it caught our treehouse on fire. And of course, to get to the treehouse, you climb a knotted rope, and so anyway, we had to run to the house and get some water. We put that out. That stopped our cooking deal on the thing. I don't know, gosh darn. Well, before all the river work was done, they was having outboard motor races between Kansas City and St. Louis. And, they would use, it happened during the summertime, and I know that they'd probably be, hours before all of them get by, and sometimes some of them guys would try to shortcut, and this was before the river was, they had a lot of sandbars in it, and they'd hit some of them sandbars, and it motor would fly up, and they'd have to, I don't know what all they had to do, but anyway, they'd finally get back in the channel and racing. So we had a bird's eye view, because we could see miles up the river and down the river from our vantage point. And when we didn't, if there's some activity on the river, why, we was watching it.
Mm.
And then, okay, before, I guess it was during the, because the river was kind of getting under control, and there would be an excursion boat come up, and weeks before that, well, there would be somebody in advance putting up posters and advertising and everything, and they had a steam calliope on the thing. In other words, I guess it was kind of like a organ, but it was all steam operated, and they'd get within about 3 miles Missouri City, and they'd start playing that, and I know we could watch them and hear that thing, and then they would land, and there would be usually a big crowd, and they would make an evening, afternoon, well, an early evening trip up the river, and they had a band on it, and they was dancing, and I suppose drinks or whatever, I don't know, but usually they'd make two trips, and then the next morning, while they'd head on up the river.
Did you get into any trouble or mischief when you were growing up?
Well, that too was the most of it. That was about the only thing I can really recall. Well, you know, we didn't. Well, there was one other time too. Well, we didn't get in trouble, but we had an accident. We learned to drive, and so one Sunday, Mom and them had gone, and anyway, we took the car out and picked up Willard Spore. We were going to teach him to drive, and of course, all the roads were gravel then, God dang it, you know, and so he went around the curve, and he hit some loose gravel and went in a ditch, and he bent the axle on his car, and I don't know, we was probably maybe a mile from home. Anyway, we left kind of a track, but anyway, we got home, and Dad had, for some reason or another, he had a running gear of a baby Oakland, and it was the front and rear axle on the frame. That was all that was on it. And anyway, we took the axle out. We exchanged axles and had it all back together before they got home, and I don't know, it was several months after that. This old frame was out behind Dad's bee house, and he said, well, how come that axle bent? And then I told him, and he said, well, it's a good thing I had it, wasn't it?
Yeah. Did you have any brothers and sisters?
I was the middle one. I had a brother and sister older, and I had a brother and a sister younger.
So could you give me their names? Could you give me their names?
Well, the older brother was Robert S. Jr., and the older sister was Mary Margaret, and my younger brother was Arbor Leonard, And yeah, I mean, her sister was Catherine Fay. Mm-hmm.
Did you have a nickname?
Kenny was all.
Okay.
That was one of the nicer ones, I think.
What's your best memory of your childhood?
The what now?
What was the best memory of your childhood?
Oh, God, man, I've had so many of them. I can't answer that.
All right. What's your worst memory of your childhood?
Well, when I lost my eye, I guess.
How'd you do that?
Fireworks.
Oh, okay. About how old were you when that happened?
I guess that would have been 33.
Okay. Do you have any favorite stories from your childhood?
No, not really.
Are you married or were you married?
Well, I got married in 42. I was going with Betty Ann Walters, and I had met her. She'd started a school down there in her freshman year, and she had graduated and was working in Kansas City for a lawyer. And she wanted to get married, and I said, well, you know, I'm 1A, I'm not going to do that. And then they called me for physical, and then it changed my classification to 4F. So I thought, well, okay, I won't have to go now. So we got married. And then it was only about 5 months I got called.
Oh, okay. So your wife's name was Betty
Ann.
Betty Ann Walters? Okay. What was the date of your marriage?
July 22nd, 1942.
1942, okay. Where'd you get married?
Kansas City, Kansas.
Okay. Do you remember your wife's birthday?
April 24th, 1924.
Okay. Do you know where your wife was born at? City, county, and state?
She was Clay County. That's about close.
Clay County, Missouri. Okay. When did your wife pass away? When did your wife pass away?
February 2nd, 1966.
Okay. Do you have any children?
One child.
Okay. What's the girl or boy's name?
It's a boy, 12. Philip Terrence.
Philip Terrence, okay. And I think you told us you worked at Lake City Arsenal for 35 years?
No.
Oh, I got that wrong?
No. It was only about 4 years there.
Oh, 4 years. Where were you at for 35 or whatever?
I said, I worked at the auto parts when 46 till I went to Lake City. And that was in around 51 when they started it up.
Okay.
And then I was 55 when I went to Havens.
Okay. That's an air conditioning? Or what's Havens?
No, that was a steel fabricator. They built buildings and bridges and...
Oh, okay.
And they fabricated steel.
Oh, okay. What's your religion?
Oh, Christian.
Christian, okay. Okay, so you were in the military. You enlisted in the Army?
No, well, not really. I got drafted.
Oh, you were drafted. Okay. Yeah. So, and that was 1943.
That was when I went in service, 43.
Do you remember what group or company and all that stuff?
I was stationed at Fort Leavenworth, the military barracks, as a guard. And, I was there about 18 months, I guess, altogether. And, I guess some of our first ones job. Well, okay, there was three shifts, and you were on 24 hours and off 24 hours. If you weren't on active duty, you was in reserve. Shift started at noon, 12 o'clock, noon. And usually you went to work, and we worked from 6 to 4. Then you'd be, and then you'd be off, and then you'd come back in at midnight. But anyway, you was either working or you was in reserve. And then you would be off the next noon. When mm-hmm. Then you'd be off for 24 hours.
So all your service time was over at Fort
Leavenworth? Well, anyway, I guess it was about 6 months, I guess it was. I was in General Guard, and then I got promoted to being a turnkey on the main gate. And there was two gates, and there'd only be one gate open at a time. And there was a bunch of, well, the offices were up above where the main gate was, and there were some civilians that were instructors in the various shops, whether it was a carpenter, machine shop, or they also had a tailor shop, and laundry, and all this stuff. And so they was prisoners, but usually there was a civilian supervisor over those shops, and they all passed through the main gate, and of course they had badges, but you know, it was also required that you recognize faces. So anyway, I had that job for about 6 months, and then I got another job as a company mechanic, working out of a company supply room. And of course, they had the armory there, and I did minor repair and the barracks there. It was a two-story brick building, and anyway, that was it. And then I guess I had a pass, I guess it wasn't, and I came home, and when I came back, why, I had shipping orders, and that had been 44, I guess. Anyway, I ended up in Indiantown Gap in Pennsylvania. That was a staging area for the European theater. And about every 4 hours, why, you'd be called out of the barracks, and they'd lead off a bunch of names. And they would, in other words, it was a staging area. And I was there for, I don't know, about maybe 3 months. And then I ended up getting called, and then I was moved to the APO in Long Island for European theater. So it was the Army Post Office, and that was where I spent the last, I guess it was about 8 months there.
Mm-hmm. I want to ask you, have you ever been down into the coal mine in Missouri City?
Yes.
Oh, you did get to go in there. Well, what was that like?
Dark.
So were you down there when there was a fire at any time?
No, there was.
That was long before?
Well, I never didn't know there was a fire there.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. It was only about, I think it was around 300 feet deep. And they had, I guess they were really donkeys. That's what they used in the mine to pull the cars from where they was digging them. They at the bottom of the shaft, there was electric lights. There were bulbs hanging around. And there was two shafts with one car would be going up, the other down. In other words, they did take fan, and there was about 1, 2, 3. There was four, I guess it was four levels of stops. In other words, the bottom, and then the ground level, and then the next level was where the coal was really processed, because it had a steel floor and then the coal cars were flanged wheels, and they would probably, I don't know, probably maybe a ton of coal, half a ton of coal or something like that on each car. Maybe it's 500. I don't know what the actual capacity of those cars was, because they would put chunks of coal around it and make kind of oil in what the shower was in there, and they would weigh it. And they had a little metal tag of all the miners' number, and so they would weigh them and at credit to whatever it was. And I don't know just what the process was there, but that's where the loaded the trucks and wagons. There was two chutes that they would load that, and then the third chute was where they stopped and then filled the bins for the trains. And there was also a siding. Well, there's on the main floor there was a siding for rail cars on the siding. In other words, that, and then the one for the engines was on the third level, and the fourth level is where all the waste was dumped and had a dump.
Okay.
And of course, the hoist was steam operated, and Anneli Battaglia was the engineer there, and of course, the cables were wrapped around a big drum. It was probably, probably 6 foot or so in diameter, and it was also had a dial on the drum for the different landings, in other words. But then on the edge of the drum, there would be a pointer, a mark, and that was the exact location of the levels so they could move the cars in and out.
Mm, okay. Was the distillery still down there when you were around in your days? Or with the Hutchison Distillery? Or
did no, that was before my...
That was gone? Okay. Okay.
But that was some relation to my family.
Oh, really?
Well, it ended up in part of the family.
Mm. Okay. Do you know where it was located at? If you weren't down there today,
That was before.
Okay,
but that was before my time.
Before your time.
Yeah.
Okay.
It would probably have been. Well, I don't know how to describe it to you now. Well, it would have been west of where the business district is, and on the hillside, on, you know.
Yeah, the roads have changed around over the time here.
Some degree. Well, the main road has never changed. That, through town, that was it.
Well, now, Stillhouse Road, was it pretty much the same?
It was there.
Okay. Okay, so would it have been...
Okay, there was another still there.
Oh, okay. Oh, okay. So they moved it.
Well, I don't know. This all happened before my time.
Okay, that's all right.
That all happened before my time.
You can't speak for things that happened long before. Okay.
Well, but the Stillhouse, that's where it got its name. God dang it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Jay, do you have any questions or anything?
No, I didn't want to interrupt you.
Okay.
When you mentioned the operator, is it what you're talking about?
Well, that was before my time.
Somebody said that was a man named Ollie Battaglia.
Yeah, he mentioned that. But I thought you said that was the engineer or something. Or maybe I'm mistaken.
Well, okay, let me get oriented here a little bit. And there's the drum. Well, I don't recognize this layout. This was different from what I remember. This was earlier than that.
Okay.
But that lever, that is, but it's not the same. I don't know.
Does that man look familiar to you?
Well, I'm not going to comment on that. I'm not certain, because it could be, and I'm just not positive.
Yeah. Why were you in the mine? Were you working at that time, or why were you down in there?
No, hell, I was still a kid. I wasn't working. Well, I think I went down with a cousin, I think it was Donald Bedgood, and I think it was Donald and you guys trying to scratch my brain.
Now we're not talking, Kenny.
But
I was just curious because if you went down there with Dutch or something to see your daddy.
Well, it was staged, I guess, more or less. But there was, I remember there were several, oh boy, now you're scratching my head now.
That's all right. That's all right.
There were several miners there because they had the carbide lights on. And there was, I know, oh boy, there was Dad and Uncle Bill, and I can remember, oh gosh, what was his name? Well, there was probably five or six, seven or eight. There was a whole group of miners there. Mm-hmm. In other words, this was a kind of a pro. And why I can remember it is because W.A., he was kind of a photographer fan. And that was a picture. That was why it was set up that he would take, he took a picture. And so I just happened to be the snot nose in the group.
Okay. I'm looking for that picture now. I can't find it, but I've seen that. And I think you told me the names of the people in it one time. So you were just down there.
Well, yeah, I was there. Well, it was a plus for me. Mm-hmm. But anyway, they took that picture. And I remember seeing the picture too, God dang it.
Well, there was... I might find it, and you might recognize it.
Well, okay. The faces are going through my mind right now, but okay, you know, sometimes it's names, God dang it.
It gets away.
Well, it gets away. And
one of them was a photo, I remember. It's all right. I don't mean to scratch your brain.
I can see the group there, you know.
Never mind. Dave's doing a good job of asking questions that don't make your puzzler get tired, you know, which is nice.
Well, I'm gonna...
Delbert Pohl was one of them. Delbert Pohl. Oh, God, it'll come to me here.
All right.
When I'm not...
I'm going to stop the recording here.